Blog Talk Radio.
This is Jas Ogonye, Will Bluewater, a seventh-grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. As Bluewater, seventh great grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
All right, folks, we're on the air. And by the way, folks, if you would like to call in, the number is 347-996-3318, or now that's right on the page in front of you, and there is a little blue symbol next to the phone number, to the right of the phone number, with an S in it. That's the Skype symbol, and get on Skype and give me a call. So, Jeff, let's catch up. What's life been like the last year?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that. We've had all kinds of things going on. Been involved with a few different organizations trying to make some changes in the world. Been involved in being on a TV program, involved with Aquaba. Been doing ceremonies like we always do. It's been kind of a busy time. When I started posting on Facebook about doing this second interview with you, you know, I put on there to tell people, I said, you know, it's been just a little over a year since we've done the first one. And I realized it's been just a little over 2 years since we did the first one.
Yeah, I was thinking, yeah, that was that's probably true. It moves. You know, the older you get, the faster it flies by. That's how Einstein discovered relativity, because he knew the older you get, the faster the years flew by.
Right.
Yeah, just go ahead and just tell your story.
All right. Well, let's. It's like I told you before, I kind of wanted to recap a little bit about the first interview we did, kind of bring people into the loop a little bit. A couple years ago, Bluewater did an interview with me, and he asked me some questions about Aquaba Native American Church and a particular court battle that I'd had in Price, Utah. That court battle, the end result of that court battle was I set case precedent nationwide by having the judge rule that I had the legal right to have in my possession the Native American Church sacrament, cannabis. And as such, she dismissed the possession of paraphernalia charges that were attached to the indictment that they filed against me. Well, at the time of that last interview, when me and Blue Water spoke, I told him that I had some charges 30 miles south of there that I was still facing. Now I kind of want to tell people a little bit about them charges. They're still going on. Here it is, a little over 2 years, and you know, the truth of the matter is I'm right back to square one, as though they had just filed the ticket on me just here 3-4 days ago. What happened was I had gone over to another member's house, and I had picked up some grandmother sacrament, some Grandmother Rosa Maria. And I was on my way back to the place where I was living, and the police officer seen me, and he, assuming I had no driver's license, decided he was going to pull me over. He pulled me over. I had pulled into a parking lot there, a 7-Eleven style parking lot. And I pulled in, got out of the vehicle, and the officer approached, and, you know, he told me that he's going to write me a ticket for not having a driver's license, and that he wanted to search the vehicle. And I told him, I said, well, I don't consent to any searches. He says, well, that's all right. I don't really need your consent, because really what I'm going to do is I'm going to inventory the vehicle due to impound. I'm going to impound the vehicle on. I said, all right, well, in that case, can I have my my significant other come over, and as you inventory my stuff, I'll put it in her vehicle, because I just won't be able to get my vehicle out of inventory. I can't afford that. And he says, yeah, I'll do that. And so as he's going through my stuff, we're unloading it out of one car and into the next. And I told the officer, I said, look, I know what you're doing. I said, look, let me show you. The only thing I have in this vehicle that you could possibly consider contraband is in this bag. And I pulled out my medicine bundle. And then I pulled out all the items in it that could possibly have been considered contraband. I had a sack with some peyote in it. I had about an ounce of Grandmother Rosa Maria. I had some paraphernalia used for smoking the Rosa Maria. And I think that's about all he confiscated. Anyway, he confiscated those items from me. And I told him, I said, listen, before you think about doing that, I need you to read some paperwork. And I presented the officer with my authorized participant card. And then I went one step further, and I presented him with the rest of the documents that allow me to have them medicines in my possession, the declaration naming me as a president of the church, etc. Well, he decided at this time that maybe he'd better check with somebody that has a little bit more knowledge about the law than he does. And in the middle of this traffic stop, he called and spoke to the prosecuting attorney. Prosecuting attorney advised him that he should confiscate the items, and write me a ticket, and send them to him, and then the prosecutor would decide whether to charge me or not. Well, that's the gist of the stop. The end of the stop was kind of shocking, in that no sooner did the officer get done conducting the inventory due to impound, then he got a call on his radio asking him to respond to a automobile accident down the road from where he was at. And so rather than actually impounding my vehicle, he went ahead and turned the vehicle back over to me and went ahead and responded to this accident down the road. A few weeks later, I got a notice in the mail that I was to go to court and face charges for possession of drug paraphernalia, possession of a controlled substance, cannabis, driving on a suspended license, driving with a revoked license plate, and a half dozen other minor traffic infractions. Bullshit. doesn't apply. And I started the court proceedings with that. Now, this was going on at the same time that I was dealing with the Price case, in which I was told I had the legal right. Now, when the Price case was, when I finally went to sentencing on that, because the cannabis charges were dismissed, except for the driving on a metabolite, I was ended up sentenced to I had to do a drug and alcohol assessment, and I had to follow the recommendations of that drug and alcohol assessment. So I got a hold of James Moody. Oh, and the courts did order that drug and alcohol assessment be done through the Aquaba Native American Church Habilitative Program. So I got a hold of James Moody, and he did an assessment with me, which lasted a few weeks. And after we got done with the assessment, Mooney had come to the conclusion he felt that I was using cannabis inappropriately, and that I should attend a 30-day course in the habilitative program to help me assist in utilizing these medicines in an appropriate and respectful manner. And so I submitted myself to that habilitative program. In fact, I ended up doing about 6 months in the program, 3 months in the program itself as a participant, and then 3 months afterwards as a volunteer helping out with the program. Because of an error in paperwork and the mail system, my completion letter was never sent to the judge in Price. So 2 years later, I was arrested. I was told I didn't complete the things I was supposed to do. And it took us about 3 months to get all the paperwork lined up, get all the court dates lined up, etc. During this 3 months, I was incarcerated. Once everything was lined up, James Mooney went and hand-delivered a copy of the completion letter to the prosecuting attorney, and they closed that case successfully. However, while I was in that habilitative program over in Emory County, the case we're talking about tonight, went ahead and did what they call a trial in absentee. In other words, they went ahead and had a trial without me there. And they found me guilty. And so 2 years after this all began, I get arrested and I'm told that I got to go to jail, and I don't get a trial. I don't get any due process or any of that, because they already did that without me. And the judge sentenced me to 60 days in the county jail. I asked the judge if I could have 7 days to put my affairs in order, and I'd go ahead and turn myself into jail. And he said, you know, he had just seen that I was always I was always on top of going to court, et cetera. So he granted me that 7 days of leave. During that 7 days, I got my stuff in order and packed it away and all into a storage shed, mind you. And I went and I turned myself into that jail to serve that 60-day sentence. I spent 7 days doing a little bit of research in the library there at the jail. And on that seventh day, I filed a motion to the courts asking for a new trial. In that motion, I claimed that multiple constitutional violations of my rights had happened. And the district court judge that got that motion and put in front of him, he read through it. He felt that I had merit in what I was saying, and he granted the motion for a new trial. I was given that notice a couple of days later via the mail system, told I was granted a new trial, Well, in being that I was granted a new trial, what that basically says in the legal world is that everything that had happened up to that point never happened. So everything has to start over. So I filed another motion. I asked the judge to release me from jail pending the outcome of the trial de novo. And I said that being as I turned myself in for sentencing prior to filing the motion for the trial de novo, I showed that I was not a flight risk. The judge agreed and he released me. I've been to multiple court hearings since then, in which time I think I've been to 12 so far since then. And in all 12, they've postponed the hearing. My latest news is that the public pretender that I've been working with, Mr. David Allred, and the same public pretender that I worked with in the Price area, finally, after me having enough of him not wanting to actually represent me, all he wants me to do is tell people I'm guilty of something that I'm not. After I asked the judge if I could fire him and the judge denied me, here during this last week, my attorney, Mr. Allred, has asked the judge if he could be relieved too. And the judge has granted that. So I get to start all over down there as though nothing had ever happened. I begin again. The only difference is I'm in the district court, state court level.
Friends, this is Will Blue Otter encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Oklahoma Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
In addition to that, back over in Carbon County, I was on a pedal bike on an adventure to go gather my children up and to go gather sage so that we could go to an upcoming ceremony that was about to happen within a few days of the time this incident I'm speaking about now happened. And I was arrested by another officer. This officer arrested me on a warrant. They questioned me heavily regarding my involvement with the church, and they could find nothing else to get me on. They charged me with possession of cannabis, and then they charged me with possession of a dangerous weapon by a Category 1 restricted person. In other words, they said that because I'm an ex-felon, I am not allowed to have a tool for cutting sage. And as such, that's a dangerous weapon, which warrants them to incarcerate me for up to 5 years of my life in the Utah State Prison. However, I go through it and I look at all their charges and the way they worded things, and it all boils down to the fact that they don't like the idea that I have cannabis, that I'm able to utilize and pray with that sacred sacrament, Grandmother Rosa Maria. And so, as such, I've been a target. And we spoke about this last time I called in, how I kind of painted the target on my back by standing up against the state. As a result of that, they're still shooting arrows at me. And I'm still standing up. I'm still fighting them. Because the truth of the matter is that the laws are on our side. Are you still there?
Yep.
Beautiful. I tend to wandering off in my conversation here. I figured maybe I'd lost direction.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, just keep wandering.
Beautiful. Anyway, so the long and short is because of these court cases and what have you, I've started a couple of different things. I've started the You Can Help Cannabis Repatriation Fund. It's a fundraiser. It's one of the things I've seen on Facebook and I got involved with. I'm hoping I can raise a little bit more capital so I can actually hire an attorney rather than rely on the state's public defender. That being said, I know that even a hired attorney is still buying into the same legal system to be part of the problem. The difference is if I'm paying him, then he has to say what I want him to say. And he can't argue with me. And so, I've started that fund, and, on my Facebook page, people can find a link to that if they'd like to donate. Every penny is going to help. The truth of the matter is if I walk this through the courts and I go through the United States Supreme Court, which is what I'm hoping for, then the government, the state government, the federal government will have no choice but to recognize the authorized participant card and to recognize those who hold it as untouchable when it comes to utilizing these earth-based sacraments that we use, these indigenous plants that we use for healing. And I'm not just talking about those that we call sacraments. I'm talking about those that the Creator gave us to use for healing, whether the label sacrament on them or not.
You know what I find ironic? What I find ironic is that cannabis is a Schedule I drug, except the, from what I understand, the Rastafarian Church has the right to use cannabis on federal property. Okay.
Absolutely. That is correct in that the Rastafarians are the first people in United States legal history to have cannabis recognized as a sacrament.
Okay? Right.
My case in Carbon County and Price, that even though it's a lower court ruling, that was the first case that had a government entity recognized cannabis as a sacrament for the Native American Church. Okay? But the thing is it doesn't matter whether it's cannabis or peyote or a damn palm tree. The truth of the matter is the Creator put it here so that we can utilize it, so that we can build our homes with it, so that we can heat and cook our food with it, so we can provide for our families with it. And that doesn't matter what the plant is. God gave it to us, and no court has the right to tell us we can't utilize it. And that's according to the United States Constitution, Amendment 1, the Bill of Rights. I get really passionate. My brother James, he gets after me a lot. He says I come across as though I'm being angry. And, maybe I do come across as I'm angry,
Hey, I've heard him go off sometimes, too.
So, the truth of the matter is, I've spent 11 years of my life locked up because I utilized cannabis. Because I took a plant from the earth. And I put it into my body. And because of that, I didn't hurt nobody because of that. Okay? I took a plant. the same thing as when we eat lettuce, and I put it in my body. And because of that, these courts here in Utah decided that I need to stay in prison for 11 years, 13 years total, 11 years inside. So, yeah, maybe I do sound angry. I think maybe I have the right to be angry about my liberty being taken from me, you know, without my choice.
I got a question.
Saying in those laws were produced over lies 40 years before I was born, for hell. So, well, 20 years before I was born.
I got a question.
Yeah,
I've been, you know, I've done a little bit of reading and one source indicates that, you know, back in the 30s, that it was Utah that was the first state to outlaw cannabis because they were targeting Mexican immigrants. Of course, another source said that's not true. What's your reading of the history?
You know, I would be willing to bet that that is one of, mind you, the truths about how cannabis became targeted to become illegal. See, the truth of the matter is no matter how you look at it, the history speaks for itself. And the history shows that the people who were interested and who backed and lobbied making the cannabis plant and the hemp plant illegal, those people that paid for that, that's the DuPont company. That's,
yep.
That's where your plastics come from. That's where your oils come from, you know. The other companies that was involved were your textile industries, you know, your big cotton farmers and stuff. And so, you know, really it boils down to the ones that were in power who had money did not want their power base threatened. And so they made it illegal for us to have something that God gave us, even though that goes directly against the United States Constitution by making the law in that manner.
And it went against the American Medical Association because every single pharmaceutical company was using cannabis, and they said it was the most useful thing they had in the pharmacopoeia. But no, these Standard Oil and these other corporate gangsters knew better and were greedy. I wonder how many millions of years, man years, had been spent in slavery in prisons because of those, excuse my language, assholes.
You know, the truth is that, and you know, if I'd have thought that we were going to speak statistics at all, I actually have some charts and stuff.
But can you imagine? I mean, there's
the numbers are staggering. Okay,
how many millions are incarcerated right now in federal prison because of marijuana?
I can tell you right now there is in excess of 2 million people in America incarcerated strictly on marijuana charges.
Okay, and every one of them got sentenced to a sentence plus a fine, and the only way they can work off that fine is to work in some prison industry, making license plates or telemarketing, or you know, making somebody else rich.
Yep.
Because it is legal to make a person do slave labor if you're literally a slave.
Absolutely.
You are a slave. They turned you into a slave. What kind of work did they make you do when you were incarcerated?
Okay, for the first 3 years I was in prison, I was incarcerated in a unit affectionately known as 288. I believe the actual housing designation is Timpanogos. We called it 288 because when it was first built, it housed 288 inmates. They doubled that number before I moved into that unit. So the first 3 years I was in prison, I was in the 288 unit, and I worked on a work crew called the berm crew. And it was my job to dig these hills that were next to the units. There was these landscape-type hills. It was my job to dig them out and fill in an amphitheater that was in the center of our compound there. And we got paid 40 cents an hour for 3 hours a day, even though we was required to work for 5 hours a day. We basically used a shovel and a wheelbarrow, and we moved dirt from one side to the other of the compound. And then when we got done filling in the amphitheater, we turned around and we moved that dirt from the amphitheater back over to the berms where it started out. And that was our productive job that we was doing in prison to help out, you know, to become better productive members of society.
Well, that's a little bit better than breaking rocks, don't you think?
Well, at least them folks, you know, that are in Mississippi and, you know, that are out there that are doing them things where they're breaking rocks and what have you, you know, the truth of the matter is they're breaking rocks by cutting roads into the land. So at least them folks that are out there doing that slave labor, you know, are doing something that benefits the community. They're not moving dirt from one hill to another and back again. And this is what your taxpayers are paying for. You know, this is your tax dollars. The tax dollars that you earned working your ass off went to put me to work in prison, moving dirt 45 feet from one spot to another and back again.
And they paid about how much do they pay to keep a prisoner in jail a year?
I want to say the last numbers I looked at, now granted these numbers are several years old. I've been out of prison for almost 8 years now. So I want to say that at that time it was about $65 a day to house an inmate in prison.
Okay, that's about that's the equivalent of about $8 an hour. So it's about minimum wage something like that. Okay, yeah. Okay, really, yeah, that's interesting. And you know what really gets me is the ignorance. It's just, you know, I mean, what really gets me is the hypocrisy. You know, and I mean,
oh man.
I joined the LDS Church. I mean, I don't want to seem like I've got an axe to grind with Utah, but I know one hell of a lot about Mormon history. And, you know, basically, I've done a lot of traveling. I've been to a lot of different kinds of, I've met all kinds of different people. And, you know, people are just people. It doesn't matter whether they're Mormons or Jews or whatever. It just doesn't matter. You know, you've got some really wonderful people in the Mormon Church. You've got wonderful support. More people. It seems like it's about 10%, in my mind, no matter what group you belong to, about 80% of that group is really not remarkable. About 10% are pretty evil, and about 10% are really the princes of the world.
Yeah.
Except, you know, in government, you know, it's about, 1%, you know, at the top and 80%, and you can add that, make that 19% evil, you know. So, like, you know, guys like Paul Grant, you know, Paul Grant was a giant of a man. When I was an executive with the Boy Scouts of America in Salt Lake City in the early 80s, I was assigned to be the first varsity scouting executive, and he was my volunteer counterpart. And this was the guy in the circuit court, the federal court there, that got the most difficult cases. He was the one that tried, you walk into his chambers, and there's a picture up on the wall of the NBA All-Stars all dressed in black robes, and the caption on the poster says the Supreme Court. And this guy was about 6'9" tall, looked like Abraham freaking Lincoln. And you would never meet a finer person. But you know what? I have a sneaking suspicion that he would have looked down his nose at you because you dared to use a substance that God, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure the man's dead by now.
It's funny that you say that and you talk about people looking down on noses and stuff. It's ironic. And you even mentioned Mormons. Joseph Smith had a hemp farm. This is a fact. This ain't something that can be argued. This is a fact.
Abraham Lincoln smoked sweet hemp.
Yeah.
Thomas Jefferson.
Absolutely. Now let's go just one step further. You mentioned Utah, you mentioned Mormons. Mormons fled to Utah. They were people that were fleeing religious persecution.
Yeah.
They were persecuted because of their religious beliefs, and they fled to Utah. And in the process of that, when they was trying to be recognized as a state, Utah and some people that were part of Utah at that time, they put together something that's pretty neat. And most of us don't ever think to look at it. But how many of us have actually read our own state's constitutions?
Friends, this is Will Blue Otter, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aqua Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
Well, I read enough to know that Utah is a commonwealth. It's not actually a state.
Well, here, check this
and
out.
And it's a commonwealth for a reason, because believe that in having all things common. And I know Brigham Young was absolutely adamantly opposed to allopathic medicine.
Well, here, check this out. The very first, if you will, section in the Utah Constitution talking about rights. It's the Utah Constitution, Article 1, Declaration of Rights. Section 1, Inherent and Inalienable Rights. For those who don't read legalese, what that inherent and inalienable basically means, that means that you're born with it and that nobody can take it from you. Period. It's even a period right there. I'm looking at it. Anyway, it says Article 1, Section 1, Inherent and Inalienable Rights. Period. All men have the inherent and inalienable right to enjoy and defend their lives and liberties, to acquire, possess, and protect property, to worship according to the dictates of their conscience, to assemble peaceably, to protect against wrongs, and to petition for redress of grievances, to communicate freely their thoughts, their opinions, and being responsible for the abuse of that right. And did you hear the important part in that that says something to those of us who follow these faiths? It says we have the inherent and inalienable right to worship according to the dictates of our conscience, not according to the dictates of what somebody wrote down in a book somewhere, but according to the dictates of our conscience. Now, you know, them Utah pioneers, they also put another thing in that constitution that says a lot about where their thoughts were when they're talking about religion and spirituality. Article 1, Section 4, Religious Liberty. The rights of conscience shall never be infringed, period. Wait a minute, I need to repeat that again. Article 1, Section 4, Religious Liberty. The rights of conscience shall never be infringed, period. And then it goes on and it states, the state shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. No religious test shall be required as a qualification for any office of public trust or for any vote at any election. Nor shall any person be incompetent as a witness or juror on account of religious belief or the absence thereof. There shall be no union of church and state, nor shall any church dominate the state or interfere with its functions. No public or property shall be appropriated for or applied to any religious worship, exercise, or institution for the support of any ecclesiastical establishment. Them some pretty powerful words them Utah pioneers put together there, don't you think?
Well, it certainly didn't take them long to become what they hated.
You know, there's truth in your words there. But, you know, I'm anxious for the judge to tell me, and I've had so many people tell me, well, you know, that's not what they meant. okay, so why did they write it in that wording? Why would these learned men take so much time to use such careful wording in writing an important document if they didn't mean what they was writing?
You know, that reminds me of a story of Bill Clinton's uncle lived way down south in southern Arkansas. And, you know, when Bill Clinton was governor, there was millions and millions and millions of dollars that was raised to improve the road system in Arkansas, which is absolutely atrocious. And after all this money was raised, not a thing was done about the roads in Bill Clinton's uncle's county. So Bill Clinton gets a call from his uncle. And he said, nephew, he says, y'all have raised hundreds of millions of dollars to improve the road system in this state. Why hasn't anything been done in my county? You know what Bill Clinton told him?
What's that?
They didn't mean it. They didn't mean it. So that's what they're going to tell you is, oh, the framers didn't mean it.
Yeah, that's what they're going to tell us too when the next president's voted on and it's not the current one. The current one's going, oh, the people didn't mean it.
Well, let me tell you something. I've been accused by an Orthodox rabbi of having the gift of prophecy. And I don't know, you know, I don't blow this trumpet very often. All I really have done is finish the work that Mad Bear Anderson started when he was walking this planet. What I did and what he wanted to do was do a global study of prophecies, Christian prophecies, biblical prophecies, indigenous prophecies, from all over the world. And he says, and he was in the process of doing this when he passed away from, he had taken so much diabetes upon himself and off of the people that it killed him. But he said, someday somebody's going to do this, and when they do, they're really going to have something. Well, in the process of doing this, and I didn't even know that I was doing this, and I didn't know it was him that appeared to me in a dream in 1985 until 1996 when I saw a picture of him for the first time. Well, I discovered a bunch of really interesting things. And my point is there's a lot of people on this planet that thinks that God doesn't mean what he said. That if things got so bad on this planet that of course through Jesus, you know, he said, you know, in the last days it's going to be like it was in the days of Noah. And if you go back into Genesis and read about how bad it was in the days of Noah, and I'm not talking about, you know what, if you look at Sodom and Gomorrah, I'm not talking about sex. I'm talking about if you go and actually, I mean, you've heard all your life that the reason why Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed was because of homosexuality. Not so.
No, my understanding is it was because of the greed that was running rampant throughout the city.
It was because of the lack of charitability.
Yeah.
The number one most important thing was, and it's just like, now I'm a descendant of the tribe of Benjamin, and in the Bible, there's a story about a Levite that was traveling through Benjamin town, and Benjamites, I mean, these guys, they were the biggest, baddest, most gifted tribe of Israel. They almost beat the other 11 tribes in a civil war. They became so arrogant at one point. And this is what happens to people, is they forget where they came from because they get fat, dumb, and happy. And I'm here to tell you that this entire planet is about to get a wake-up call. It's coming. And, you know, Jesus said, you know, now if Jesus said there's going to, no, back in 1992, I ran across a guy by the name of Rocco De Villiers. Rocco was a physical therapist, and he worked on the general authorities, and his son married the daughter of one. And before the marriage, he got together with the general authority and said, "Well, what should we get the kids for? Well, what do you think? Let's give them some food storage." And the general authority just laughed and said, "Oh, that's passé, okay." So now, you know, originally the Mormons were told to store, to do what the Hopi did, which is store for 7 years. Then, you know, then that was amended. You know, around the turn of the century, you know, it was 2 years. And I think it was President Snow said, well, if the Mormons do half right, they'll just sneak through, okay? And because they knew what had happened in California with the Ark storm that lasted for 40 days. And flooded the entire Central Valley of California. Sacramento was under several feet of water, and the Corps of Engineers, you know, they're trying to figure out who even owns the levees out there because they're so old and so poorly built. If it happened again, and these storms happen periodically, and with the way the weather is shifting because of the wobble of the earth, I mean, we now know that the Sahara Desert used to be a paradise. All kinds of things could happen because of climate change. But something is going to happen. Back in 92, Nobody, it wasn't even on anybody's radar that flooding or tsunamis or whatever could really shake up this planet. There's a lot that's happened since then. Now go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, as I listen to you talk about this, I would like you to, there's a series of books, and I can't think of the names of the authors right off the top of my head. There's a series of books, and it's called the Left Behind series. You know, you can watch the movies, but the books are even better. The matter is if you're really, really interested, everything that's going on today was predicted by them two Bible scholars.
Right. Well, and they got it all out of Scripture. But
yes, absolutely.
Now, five days ago, there was an astronomer at McDonnell Observatory. Now, everybody's heard about Planet X and Nibiru. Back in the early 1960s, and I'm going to play a 15-minute clip here in a minute, but back in the 60s, there was an article in Popular Mechanics magazine where this planet had been discovered. They said it's going to be here in 50 years. So that 50 years is up. Now, there's been a lot of talk about Nibiru and Planet X and all this other kind of stuff, but, you know, Christians, because they have really poor translations, don't, and if you ask any rabbi, they will tell you that this planet has been totally destroyed and reformed several times. This is the reason why you found leather boots a mile deep inside the earth in coal mines and gravels that are over a million years old, okay? This is the reason why they found metal tubing in chalks underground in France that are over a million years old. There have been some big shakeups in this world, okay?
Yeah.
And the Hopi will tell you that four times in the past, this world has been turned over. Well, Ezekiel... you know, in the Bible, we know that originally the sun rose in the west, set in the east, and this is what the Hopi are saying: something is going to come through. And if you think about magnetics, you understand that if there was a rogue planet, and there are millions of these things that are wandering about around the universe. If a rogue planet passed early enough, close enough to the Earth, the north pole of that planet would grab a hold of the south pole of Earth and flip it right over. And if that happened, that would fulfill every prophecy that the Bible ever said, that there would be an earthquake, the greatest earthquake that ever happened, that not one stone would be left standing on another, and so forth and so on. All those prophecies are there. And for... any judge, for Bill Clinton to say they didn't mean it, and for any judge, and that's it's really sad because public officials are part of an organization, and they don't even know this, but they're part of an organization called the Elohim. Now, there's a big E Elohim and a little E Elohim, and Joseph Smith didn't understand this. He just knew that somehow the term Elohim was plural. But if you're a cop or a teacher or a judge or a senator or whatever involved in government or serving the public, you are actually part of an organization that was set up by God.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aklava Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and/or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
And when those institutions become so corrupt, like they did in the days of Noah, God will, now, and of course, immediately the Christians are going to scream, oh, that's not true, because God said he'd never use water again to destroy the world. Well, no, that's not what it says. It says that he will never again use it to destroy all life on the planet.
That's right. That's right. And there's also a reason why the priests of Aaron are anointed, okay? There's a lot of things about that Christians
right.
acknowledge.
And 5 days ago, there was an astronomer at McDonnell Observatory that published the coordinates. And anybody with a telescope that has a sidereal drive on it and knows how to do the math can look at that planet. And he published a video. And immediately, he was put under duress and told, well, you know, I did hack the NASA computers. I did find out from the NASA computers exactly where this planet was, and yes, it's all a joke, okay. But that was taken offline. But there were frames from that video that you can see up online that shows exactly who he is and what the coordinates of the planet are, and something's coming. Now, it could be a hoax, but if something is coming, your government is never going to tell you. But it would explain the behavior of the government, the reason why billions of dollars have been spent on body bags and coffins that you could put three or four people in, and four billion rounds of ammunition. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy into an extraterrestrial event coming or not. Not saying at all that I would discount that. I've seen too many things in my life that's not possible. That's for another show, though. You know, I believe wholeheartedly the reason that money is being spent the way it is exactly how it's described in that series of books we was just talking about.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I pulled up their names. It's Tim LaHaye and Jerry D. Jenkins. They wrote the Left Behind series.
Right, right.
Excellent book about what we're talking about.
Yeah, something's gonna happen. Something's getting ready to happen.
Speaking of something happening, I want to bring you up today about some more things that happened with me over the last little bit. I mentioned earlier that we was involved in a TV broadcast. And that's true. Several authorized participants from the Aquaba Native American Church of Huntington, as well as tribal people, Aquaba Native American Church from Salt Lake, Gareth Mountain Goat Climbs High, heads up that branch of the church there. We was really honored. We got a call. James gave us a call and told us that there was some folks from a cable television program that would like to do they're doing this reality TV series type thing that they'd like us all to be a part of, you know. We got a hold of James and he had agreed to it.
Now that's Univision, right?
Yeah, that is.
I got the first phone call because James wanted my phone number to be put on a PR release, so I got the call and gave him James's phone number to cut down on the amount of people that call him. But yeah, that was exciting, and Yeah, go ahead. It was tell the folks.
Yeah, it was really beautiful. And like you just said, the folks from Univision and ABC Television, these folks came down. It turns out these are the same producers that do some other really popular television shows. In fact, we didn't realize it at the time, but some of these shows are some of the most popular cable television shows out there right now. And we were kind of honored in that we met with a man by the name of Dr. Juan Rivera. He's Univision's lead cardiologist, medical doctor. And he came and he met up with us and he wanted to see how we did ceremony. You know, they talked about it as a peyote ceremony. And I need people to understand that that's represented in that show is just one of many ceremonies that are done with Aqua, the Native American Church. And each branch may do things a little bit different. What's represented on that show is not the traditional half-moon peyote ceremony that most of us are used to. That just happened to be, we had planned the sweats for some healing and baptisms that we was doing that particular weekend anyway. And so we invited them to come over and be a part of the ceremonies that were the preambles to them baptisms. And so that's what's shown in the show is that. And we talk about the medicines and the sacraments. A shameless plug here for all those who have not seen it. It's Univision. There is a link for it on the Aqua Tribal People page on Facebook. I believe James may have a link to it as well.
You can just look up Univision Strange Medicine, and you should be able to find it.
There you go. And, yeah, again, the name of that show is Strange Medicine with Dr. Juan Rivera. It really was a beautiful show. I was really honored to be a part of that. We've also had a lot of other things go on since then. Went down to Arizona, was involved with James down there in a documentary that is being filmed on the public television channels over in Sweden. Again, I was really honored to be, a part of that one as well. I'm trying to think, I was asked to go out to Montana and participate in the premiere screening of a movie called The American Drug War II, Cannabis Destiny. Have you heard of that?
Not yet.
Okay, it's beautiful. I recommend everybody get on the internet, Google it. Again, the name of the show is American Drug War II, Cannabis Destiny. It's made by the same people that made the first one, American Drug War. I went and seen that show, and I want to kind of take a minute to talk about a little boy. Actually, I want to talk about a couple of little children. The first one is a little girl by the name of Emberly. Emberly came into my life at the time that I was in the Aqua Habilitative Program. And Emberly was a little girl who was had been diagnosed with a type of brain cancer. And she was having a really rough time of it. And there was a friend, Richard, who had just been out to Colorado and he'd been gifted this cannabis oil that these folks were making out there. We didn't know nothing about it, you know. The research wasn't out like it is today. But we knew that, you know, the Spirit had led him to bring it with him that day, and he gifted it to the parents of this little girl, Emberly. And Emberly, they started giving this little girl this cannabis oil, one drop at a time. And they tell the story about how they went to the doctors, and the doctors did their x-rays and everything, and this stage 4 gastrobiploma brain cancer that they had only given her a couple of months to live, all of a sudden was shrinking. And, you know, the parents tell me later, they talk about how when they go to the doctors and they see all the other little children in there doing the radiation treatments and stuff, and all of them little children were sad and they were hurting and they were miserable. And you know, it's just heartrending to hear the pain in these parents' voices. They would describe their child and what their child was going through with this radiation treatment. And then the parents of Emberly, they told me that when they started using this cannabis oil, their little girl was no longer miserable. She could eat. And she was no longer in pain all the time. And she could actually carry on conversations. And when they'd go to doctors, she wasn't all miserable and sad and curled up in a ball. She was actually playing with the toys that were offered at the doctor's offices. And, you know, all these things and these miracles that this cannabis oil was doing. And then she ran out. There wasn't no more cannabis oil. And I got online, and I was online a lot. I'm begging people, because I knew there was a way to get it. I just didn't know nothing about it. And, you know, I'm not really computer savvy. I'm not a techno geek. I'm a techno caveman, you know. But I got on there and I was asking people. I said, look, I know it's against the law for most people in Utah to have this medicine, you know, but it's not for me. And even if it was, I don't care for this little girl and for her to be safe. I'll go anywhere to get it. And nobody would ever, I couldn't make any contacts, and I didn't know how to make it at the time. And last year, Emberly passed away. Right after she passed away, I was asked to go to this premiere, American Drug War II, Cannabis Destiny. And in this movie, there's the story of a little boy named Cash Hyde. Have you heard of the Cash Hyde Foundation or Cash Hyde story at all?
Is that Cash like Johnny Cash?
It is. It's Cash Hyde, C-A-S-H, Hyde, H-Y-D-E. I'd like everybody to Google that, Cash Hyde and the Cash Hyde Foundation out of Montana and the Cash Hyde Foundation out of Salt Lake. The Cash Hyde Foundation is a truly beautiful organization, and the members of the cancer militia that are loosely associated with the Cash Hyde Foundation, my hat's off to you. The Cash Hyde Foundation is a foundation about that little boy, Cash Hyde. He's featured in that movie, and his story is really the one that broke the news for the cannabis oil worldwide. If Cash Hyde did nothing for us, that little boy brought the information that cannabis cures cancer. Period. You cannot argue it. The science is there. The science backs it. Cannabis cures cancer. Cash Hyde had cancer. He was dying. He was in the Salt Lake Hospital. And his parents courageously, without the doctors knowing, desperate because they was told their boy was going to die within 4 days or so, they got some cannabis oil and they started giving it to their baby. And the cancer disappeared. Didn't go into remission. It went away. Happened a couple of times, and they did this without the doctor's knowledge. And then once the cannabis was gone, them parents done something even more courageous. And my hat's off to you, Mike and Callie Hyde, for everything you've done and you know, for what you do today, you know, in helping to fight pediatric cancer everywhere. My hat's off to you. They announced what they had done in giving their medicine, that cannabis oil. They announced that to the doctors, and the doctors were shocked. They didn't know what to think. I don't know. You can get on the internet and you can Google it. University of Utah, I believe it was the University of Utah Children's Hospital. It could have been LBS. I'm not sure. One of the hospitals here in Utah, the pediatric hospital, has actually teamed up with United Patients Group out of California. And the University of Utah, the school here, the doctors there from the Utah Valley Medical Center, they have actually come out and publicly approved the use of cannabis oil for children. And they made that as a public announcement.
Question.
Yeah.
Now, when you say oil, is it like a... an essential oil, you know, where you take the entire plant and juice it, or how do they produce this oil?
Have you heard of Phoenix Tears?
Now, what I do know is that if you grow a cannabis plant to 30 days, and use a masticating juicer, and drink that juice, there's some real heavy research into its anti-cancer properties, and this is long before the plant produces colas, which...
Absolutely. Okay, well, I encourage everybody out there, if they have questions on cannabis oil, to Google the name Rick Simpson and the Phoenix Tear, and Run from the Cure. There is a movie called Run from the Cure, and it fully documents the Rick Simpson story, who is another, he is the man who actually initially developed the cannabis oil. He took a 3,000-year-old recipe, he developed it to modern times, and he used that recipe on himself and cured his own cancer. Then he went public with it. And once he went public with it, the United States government stepped in and sued him and placed a gag order on him. He wasn't able to speak about what he had done with that medicine for a number of years. I believe that gag order is up now. I'm not sure, okay? But it's the Rick Simpson, the Phoenix Tears. And again, the story of the little boy I'm talking about is the Cash Hyde story. You can find that on the movie The American Drug War II, Cannabis Destiny.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aklavan Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
Essentially, what cannabis oil is like you're talking about, the essential oil. You take the cannabis plant, you extract the essential oils from it. the ancient recipe that Rick Simpson used, and that, from what I understand, is used for most of the cannabis oils, is using a denatured alcohol and boiling it, or not boiling it, but, you know, bringing it to a temperature and extracting all the THCs and CBDs and CBDBs, et cetera, out of it through that chemical extraction process. When you do that, you can, and this oil can be made at home. That's the thing. That's the problem that the government doesn't want you to realize, okay? Not only does this medicine cure cancer, but you can make it at home safely, okay? You don't need a whole bunch of million-dollar equipment and laboratory equipment to take care of your children. Mike and Callie Hyde, they began making it for their own child, and it worked, you know? The biggest problem is because of the fact that the government here has made this plant such a commodity. They've created a black market for it, and now they've created a white market for it. The whole issue, and this is what it all boils down to from the beginning, is money. You know, the problem is to get high-quality medicine today, because of the laws that are in place, nobody can afford it. And so how do we afford to treat our children and to keep our children from dying ghastly deaths of cancer and other things like leukemia and seizures? And I can go on and list the number of maladies that cannabis cures. You know, I'm sorry, I'm choking up a little bit when I think of these children, you know.
Sure.
These children shouldn't have to suffer. There shouldn't be any suffering because somebody somewhere long ago decided that they could make some money by taking something that God gave us and saying that it's bad. I'm sorry. I trust God.
Well, now, if you're talking about a 3,000-year-old recipe, you're now no doubt talking about the recipe in the book of Exodus for the holy anointing oil.
Very similar to
there's actually two. There's actually two.
Chapter 30 is what you're referring to.
Yeah, there's actually two oils, one for use in people and one for the big secret here is that this this substance. Well, first understand the Hebrew language was something that was pretty much lost, but it was brought back by the Jews, and particularly since the restoration of the State of Israel. And Dr. Arya Kaplan, back in the 70s, identified the, of course, you don't get this, you know, in the King James Bible, you know, it'll tell you it's cassia. Well, no, it was cannabis. And the Hebrew authority, Dr. Arya Kaplan, identified that as cannabis, and you can go to Wikipedia and look up holy anointing oil, and of course the there was a Polish etymologist, and that's a person who studies words, who also did a word study, and so now they know this substance that Jesus was using to cure everything under the sun. And, you know, when they thought they were dealing with a person that had evil spirits, I mean, we're talking about seizures. You know, these little kids that have, you know, 300 seizures a day are just catatonic. You know, now they're getting strains of cannabis that are where the THC is bred out and the CBDs are bred in, and they maybe have one seizure a week.
I would really like to speak on that. I have a stepson who suffers from a condition called lissencephaly. Because of this condition, lissencephaly, which means smooth brain, my son suffers from every known type of seizures and several that they're still trying to decide what they're going to call them. he is one of the children that that has really got me so passionate about getting these medicines and getting, and I'm not just talking about cannabis, I'm talking about all the healing medicines, okay? Not just cannabis, but all of them. And you know, it's because of these children that I've stood up and that I am making the stand that I'm making. You know, our children shouldn't have to suffer. You know, even Jesus said it, you know, if you suffer harm to come upon one of these children, it's better that you tie a millstone around your neck and go throw yourself in the damn river. And here we have these large corporations, big pharma corporations and big oil industries. They don't give a damn about our children. You know, this could be seen just here recently, here a couple of weeks ago, a school right here in Utah. They have totally forgotten what the hell they're supposed to be doing. They took and they distributed out the low-income sack lunches to the children, right? And then because some of them families were in arrears on their bill, they was in debt as much as $3. Them sack lunches was then taken from the children.
Yeah.
First they hand them out, then they go back and they take them from them because their parents forgot to pay a bill. How the hell is that taking care of my child?
Oh, by the way, we got a caller. I'm sorry. I am sorry. I was not monitoring the board caller. Area code 530. Did you have a question for Jeff?
No. My name is Mike. I'm with ONAC of Hay Fork, and I was just calling in on that oil story he was telling. We make that oil right here in Hay Fork, and there is like really miraculous things that are coming from it. So I just wanted to call and confirm that what he was saying is true.
Hey, Michael, the reason I suggested you call in is because I'd like to answer a question I seen. I believe it was you that was asking about sacraments, making them sacraments available to the members. Was that you?
Yes, that was me.
Okay, now here's my humble opinion on that. And understand, I'm nothing but a man. I'm a man that's made a lot of mistakes in my life. I've been walking this road, and I've been walking with the Office of the Native American Church since about 92, since before it was actually incorporated as a church. My take on it is simple. Pretty much every elder medicine person that has ever taught me has told me these words, follow your heart.
Uh-oh.
You know, if you listen to your heart and you listen to what the Creator tells you, you know, you're going to be guided by that, you know. As a pipe carrier, as a person who carries that sacred Chinupa to the Lakota Sioux Nation Native American Church, I got to tell you that it's my responsibility, you know, to listen to what the Creator tells me to do, you know. It's also my responsibility to stand up sometimes and do things when the Creator asks us to, even though it may go against what people around me think is necessary. And when I say that, what I'm referring to specifically is the laws, okay? The truth of the matter is every law made regarding cannabis is illegal on its face. Because God gave us that plant so that we can use it to heal people, okay? And it's in every one of the ancient texts that we can think of. There's a mention of this holy flower that heals people, okay? So my answer to you is, yeah, you should make that medicine available. But understand when you do so, you are painting a target on your back for the government and the powers that be to try to harass you and try to stop you from healing people. If you heal people, then they lose their power base. If you heal people, then them people won't go to the pharmacies for medicines. If you heal people, then people won't become addicts, and they won't end up in prisons for doing crimes that were thought of by people that don't even live here anymore. So I caution you that in following your heart, know that by standing up, the adversary will always go towards the brightest flame. Aho, Papa.
Excellent. Very well said. I'll take that into account. Thank you very much for that.
Aho.
Yeah, I apologize for not getting you on sooner.
Oh, that's all good. I wasn't on there, but you know, not very long, and you picked up, so it wasn't no thing at all. I just wanted to put my defense in there, and I'm gonna let you guys go ahead and get back to the show. I was just calling in to confirm, you know, a lot of what Jeff is saying about cannabis and the beneficial health benefits that it has, and also the sacramental benefits that it has. Are just like widely misunderstood by a lot of people.
Absolutely.
You know, Michael, thank you for saying that. You know, a lot of people don't understand when you're talking about sacraments, you're talking about respect. You're talking about recognizing something as a deity, recognizing the divine within a person or another being. And you know, that does command a lot of respect. For people who would like to know how to better respect the cannabis plant, I have a couple of suggestions for you. First off, if you are utilizing that medicine at this time, if you're smoking it, if you're eating it, if you're taking it into your body and you want to know how to better respect that medicine, quit utilizing it. Take a 30-day sabbatical in which you don't utilize that medicine. And during that 30 days, take inventory of your life. See if that medicine does help you, or if you're just using it as a crutch to avoid what the real problem is.
Very well said. I'm going to let you guys get back to your show, and I'm going to sign off here, and thank you for everything you've said, Jeff, and I was just throwing in my 2 cents in there. And thank you, Blue Water, for listening to me.
Hey, you bet, Guy.
Oh,
and I just want to let everybody know we've been joined by Mark Borcherding. Badger is our co-host, and he's with us, and we'll play his theme music. There it is. Hey,
I heard just what he just said about, you know, having the respect and honoring things and, you know, not just a cannabis plant, but all the plants and all the things in creation. I think we would benefit by having that same attitude that he just outlined.
Oh,
absolutely. And, Jeff, when we were on the air with you, did you get your Mayan birthday reading done?
You know, I don't believe I did.
Yeah, I don't think Mark was with us back then. Do you want to take the time to do that?
Yeah, I'm game for that.
Okay. You got to tell us your got to reveal to the world exactly how many. Days, minutes, and hours that you, and years that you've been on the planet.
Oh, hell, that's going to take some days. I don't know math.
Not quite that bad.
Well, just what's your birthday?
Okay, I was born June 26, 1972, at Salt Lake LTS Hospital at approximately 10:30 in the morning.
Okay, I'll let him work that up.
So that was June 26, 1972?
That's correct.
Okay. Just give me a second.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aquavit Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
So if we look at the traditional Mayan day count, you were born on a day that's called 10 Eb, and that particular day is made out of two things, the number 10, and then the glyph for it is the Eb glyph, and it's typically looked at as kind of the glyph of the south, kind of a yellow energy, if that makes sense to you. Maybe you have had a lot of that type of energy and color showing up in your life, maybe. The 10, number 10 has to do with creativity, the flowing, the flow of things. So that would be probably something that's been around you for a while in your life. And then the the ebb glyph itself, that has to do with things about the path, the journey of life, you know, especially from a human and a, you know, free will point of perspective. So, and it's in the Akbal cycle, which that has to do with dreaming and intuition. You may also find yourself kind of liking to go in caves and places like that.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to switch gears here a little bit and go to kind of an expanded version of the Mayan Zolk'in and give you a view of it. And it has this is going to give a forward, a backward flow of time, and then a unity where the two come together. So it's going to have kind of three parts to it. And the first part on the forward flow of time, going from your birth forward, it has things talking about ordering things, eternity things, thing to do with community and cooperation and things of that nature. Things also that border in terms of receptivity of things, stepping kind of outside of time. Mystical things coming in, jaguar energy too. So you may have been seeing that type of and things having to do with light and mirrors and reflections of things. So you may have been seeing things like that kind of guiding your life for those type of characteristics ever since you're born. On the other flow, the backward flow of time, coming from the next world cycle into this one, it has things about playing around with things, monkeying around, learning about illusion and supernatural powers. And you probably could be getting some, whether you know it or not, getting some guidance a lot from ancestors, especially about the supernatural power aspect of how it relates to dimensionality, informing things. And things that have to do with family, so family being not just present family, but future family, ancestor family, and all that. And, you know, just good energies, good teachings, and things like that. So kind of a little bit of playfulness here, but it has to do with, you know, managing kind of the Maya or the illusion and using supernatural powers to form things. That may have been getting stronger in your life in, you know, recent years. And where these two time flows come together, they create kind of a zero point or bridge from one to the other world, or osmosis between the worlds. And in yours, it has green energy, so that would relate to like the heart chakra. And it has to do with things about unifying things, especially on a soul level. Things about joy, but also about forgiveness, working with forgiveness and bringing things together. You know, a lot of stuff about bringing a lot of things, they're basically everything together. And working with Creator and the movement, the measure and movement, Hunebku in Mayan terms, of harmony, peace now, and all that. So those, so it's a little bit more, you know, I'd say kind of things, those types of aspects on kind of a higher level, on a more on a, up on a soul type of level. So that seems to be where you're kind of moving.
Sounds like you described my life pretty accurately there.
Yeah. Well,
and,
it's not me describing it. I'm just reading
Mark, I was reading through, as you were reading, doing that, I was looking through Jeff's Torah portion and half Torah, and this is the Torah portion of Pinchas, the first high priest over Israel, and it talks about the odor that's pleasing to the Lord. Well, you know, the Lord commanded his priest to make a sacrifice of the holy anointing oil, but they didn't do it right, and God got really mad at them until they got it right, you know, which included the cannabis. And cannabis means fragrant reed. This is a fragrance that God loves. God loves the smell of cannabis, and that's a vibration. All smell is vibrational rate, and I don't know about you, but it's the odor of cannabis that attracts me more than anything. I've even dreamt about it.
You know, it's again, you know, there you go again. You're reading from the what you say it was, the Hebrew what?
The Torah. This is the Torah portion. This is from the first five books of Moses,
okay.
And this is specifically for your birthday. This is the. There are 13 portions for 13 moons of the Venus cycle, and this is the part of it that kind of gives you a glimpse. Before I ever knew. Go ahead.
It's just I just find it really interesting, and you know, I don't believe in coincidence. I believe the Creator, you know, does things in a certain order in order for us to learn as individuals. But you know, it's interesting that here we are, we're reading this, and you're telling me that this is about my particular day, you know, my birthday. You know, and we're talking about that fragrant reed, you know, that cannabosum, you know, or cannabis, our holy Rosa Maria, you know. It was funny that, you know, what started this conversation that we're having right now 2 years ago was all about a vision that came to me about a burning bush, a plant that was on fire out on the desert, and it talked to me, for hell's sakes. Made me think I'd lost my damn mind, you know? and you know, then I find it, you know, and I run into that plant later, and here it is. It is the cannabis plant, you know? And then here it is. It's 20 years, some odd years later after that, you know, since 1987. And I've done years and years and years of research, and I've spent, you know, countless hours reading, you know, the ancient manuscripts of our spiritual leaders from the past, you know, and it's always, the whole thing has always been about, you know, what that plant's told me way back in 1987, when it told me that it was here to heal the world and that we needed to acknowledge it, you know. Now here it is all these years later, and that's exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to get people to acknowledge that this that this medicine is available for the world. You know, it's in the Bible. If you read about the priests of Aaron and what their job was, to take the medicine, the holy anointing oil that for healing that Christ had guided them with, and take it and heal the people. You know, when Christ laid his hand on people and took away their seizures, you know, we're only getting a small version of the story. There's literally thousands of books, documents about Jesus doing these apparent miracles and using these healing substances to you know, create what we now know the modern world as the Christian society. You know, why is it that we've stepped away from that Christian society and that acting in a Christ-like way? And you know, now it's all about money. It's all about the things that Christ rebelled against when he went in and he kicked the tables over in front of the money changers, you know. They have no business putting their money in our churches. So why does it have to be here today?
Oh, they're not even authorized to accept tithing unless... There's a Christian minister about 5 years ago that recognized that churches, they don't have the Aaronic lineage and they have no right to accept tithings. Offerings, yes. Tithing, no.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm kind of digressing a little bit away from where my point was with that. And basically what it is what you're telling me with this reading about my birthday is that even the Hebrews predicted, you know, that you know, I may have a chance of standing up and helping get this medicine recognized.
Sure. Absolutely. And, you know, I've done a lot of Torah portions for a lot of people. You're the first one I run across from this particular Torah portion. And, you know, the Jews will tell you that everybody... can read about themselves in the secret buried part of the Torah. There's a Bible code. It's an equidistant letter code, but there's also the Torah portion. It's not a fortune. You know, it's not telling your fortune, but it's giving you a look. I mean, there's no coincidence. I knew in 1977 that my dad was a descendant of the tribe of Benjamin. And then I come to find out in... just a few years ago, that my Torah portion is that portion of the book of Genesis where Benjamin was born. So there's no coincidences here.
Yeah, and see, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I just find it ironic, you know, that we're able to you know, first talk about them and then find validation in written word.
Exactly. Exactly.
Blue Otter, those Torah codes and stuff, since they were very particular in copying down each of the letters, so they wouldn't make even one mistake or one iota, right?
One jot or two.
So I suspect that they're going to find that is not just equidistant, but it's essentially a holographic matrix.
Right.
And they've probably just scratch with the equidistant part. That's probably one layer, and there's another layer that probably eventually discover, which they will fold it in upon itself, and then they'll come up with another encoding that will uncover the holographic aspect of the Torah matrix itself even better.
Like in the movie Contact.
Well, if you look at the gematria and the way the gematria is designed and the Kabbalistic tree of life, that to me sounds like a blueprint
for the exact dimensional matrix you're describing to me.
That's right.
And I had a friend just post me something, Ron, and about the cannabis and the fact that our body can actually naturally produce the, what are you, cannabinoids or whatever they call them?
Yeah.
I think we can actually produce those internally.
The cannabinoid molecule is only really truly found in two places in nature. The first place is in the cannabis plant that we know of as you know, with off of the Native American Church of Huntington, is our grandmother Rosa Maria. The second place that cannabinoids are found in nature are in a mother's breast milk during the first few weeks after birth.
Really?
Absolutely.
Interesting. Well, you know, one of the strange things about this thing with me and Benjamin is, like Benjamin, I didn't get my mother's breast milk, thanks to Dr. Spock. And I had over 100 allergies that nearly killed me when I was a kid. I was allergic to peas, beans, nuts, chicken, feathers, all inhalants. And, you know, I still have hay fever, but, man, I'll tell you, you know, you got to get that mother's milk or you don't get an immune system.
Well, you know, if God would put cannabinoids in breast milk, it kind of makes you wonder why it is he would put it on the planet in a plant, too. I mean,
yep.
Especially when, if you want to look at the science about what we're talking about, you know, let's step away from the spirituality for a second. Let's look at just the hard science of cannabis. The cannabinoid receptor system is found in all living organisms on planet Earth from the lowest squirt on up. Every living organism on this planet has a cannabinoid receptor system within it. However, there are only two places in nature where cannabinoids are produced naturally. The cannabis plant, Grandmother Rosa Maria, and our mother's breast milk. What does that tell you?
Tells you it's something we need.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aqua Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
Well, you know, the Book of Revelations talks about a plant that grows on either side of the river or the midst of the street. It can be grown 12 months of the year. It has 12 different fruits.
Talking about the vision I had in 1987.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it took cannabis for several thousand years had 12 commodities, you know, sales, rope, paper, uniforms. The Constitution was printed on hemp. Yeah, if you're hearing 90 seconds, just ignore that. We're going to go over. So don't worry about it. We'll go as we'll go to the spirit tells us to quit here tonight.
Nice. Yeah, I got to say, I really want to thank you, Blue Water, for everything you do. For you folks that are listening, I would really like to put a call out and ask y'all to send some donations in to Prophecy Keepers Radio. Blue Water here has really done a fantastic job in being a radio host for us and trying to make these programs and interviews and prophecies available to everybody, but he's just like you and I, he puts his pants on one leg at a time. And
that's right.
He needs some help to keep this radio program going.
Hey, you need it worse than I do. Give it to Jeff. He needs it for his legal fund. Okay. We only need $40 a month. We're taken care of, okay? Give money to Jeff's legal fund, please.
I really could use the help. Like I said, I started a fund. It's the You Can Help Cannabis Repatriation Fund. My intentions, any and every single penny that is donated to that fund will be used strictly and explicitly for the purposes of taking care of any legal costs that I have in repatriating the cannabis plant. And I say that way for a reason. I'm not talking about making it legal. In order for a plant to be legal, that means it has to have regulations and laws put on it. I'm talking about eliminating all laws regarding natural plants, not just cannabis, but all laws regarding these natural plants. Because the truth is, laws have nothing to do with how we deal with our spirituality and healing our bodies. If you can help, please. Every penny helps. Every dollar helps. I've been fighting this case now since 2009. Not a soul, not a person has ever donated any money to help me. This is the first time I've ever asked anybody for any type of money to help in this. And really, the only reason I'm asking for money is so that I can get an attorney that will actually speak the words I want him to speak instead of spend 6 months arguing with me, telling me I have to plead guilty to something that I'm not guilty of. That in mind, again, I want to mention the Cash Hyde Foundation. These folks are really doing an awesome, beautiful job trying to educate people about cannabis and about pediatric cancer. I cannot stress enough that everything I am doing here is not about me, okay? I need people to understand these charges I'm facing. I was sentenced to 60 days. I've done 11 years in prison. I could have done the 60 days on my head. I'm not afraid of doing the time. I'm not fighting this to avoid being punished for something. I'm fighting this, and I'm fighting these charges because they are wrong. And I'm fighting these charges so that you and your children can have the opportunity to utilize cannabis as it was intended, as the Creator put it for, to use to heal our bodies, to feed, nourish, clothe, and build our homes, our communities, and our families.
Well, sounds kind of like you're ready to end the show. Is that what you got in mind?
I wasn't thinking of anything. I'm just kind of, truth be told, I've just been letting the spirit kind of guide us in this. Maybe you're right. Maybe that is a good place to bring up to wrap and to let people know that I do plan on doing some more interviews with you sooner as I know more about what's going on with my court cases. I'd like to bring it here and present it to the people in a way that they can hear it from my mouth. That way they don't get it second and third hand. The long and short is we had some really interesting founding fathers when they founded this country. And they wrote some words for us, you know. And some of them words start out like this. So, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. And some pretty powerful words, you know, to promote the general welfare and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, for ourselves and our children, you know. Our founding fathers were really geniuses, and I don't give a damn what anybody says about keeping church separate from state. Our founding fathers were guided by the Creator. And I think that maybe it's time for us to remind them of what them words are. Remind our government powers that are in place today, you know, what them words that are in that Constitution actually mean. Because they're not about taking the rights of people from the people. I want to read this last thing, and then I think maybe we should call it off. You can help Cannabis Repatriation Legal Fund. United States Constitution, Amendment 1, Freedom of Religion, Press, and Expression. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or of the right of the people to peacefully assemble and petition the government for a redress of grievances. Jeff has successfully stood against the state of Utah's attempt to infringe on constitutionally guaranteed rights and set case precedent nationwide when the judge acknowledged cannabis as a sacrament. Both worldwide legal use of marijuana, a time has come. For more details on that. 30 miles from where the above ruling took place, the state of Utah continues in their 5-year attempts to ignore our God-given rights. The Utah Constitution says, Article 1, Section 1, inherent and inalienable rights. All men have the inherent and inalienable right to enjoy and defend their lives and liberty, to acquire, possess, and protect property, to worship according to the dictates of their conscience, to assemble peaceably, to protest against wrongs and petition for redresses of grievances, to communicate freely their thoughts and opinions, being responsible for the abuse of that right. Article 1, Section 4, Religious Liberty. Rights of conscience shall never be infringed. The state shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. No religious test shall be required as a qualification for any office of public trust or for any vote at any election, nor shall any person be incompetent as a witness or juror on account of religious belief or the absence thereof. There shall be no union of church and state, nor shall any church dominate the state or interfere with its functions. No public money or property shall be appropriated or applied to any religious worship, exercise, or institution, or for the support of any ecclesiastical establishment. Please help Jeff as he stands for us. Everything helps. I have 2 links here that both link to the Prophecy Keepers radio programs. Donate today. Every penny helps. Help Jeff stand for us all.
a hole in the process.
Aho. And next week in this time slot, we're going to be visiting with Robin Littlefeather Hannon, Anekihi, and she'll be talking about her book, Vision on Fire. She's an Oklahoma Native American Church of the First Nations Chickamauga member. The Chickamauga were the Cherokees who went on the war path and declared war against the United States government in 1776. So that should be an interesting interview. But thank you.